welcome to All Steelers Talk, your home for everything Pittsburgh Steelers, presented by AllSteelers.com.
Hello, lovely people. It is Tuesday, Victory Tuesday for the Pittsburgh Steelers, November 9th, 2021. This is All Steelers Talk, where your host, Noah Strackbine, joined every Tuesday and Thursday by my main man, Donnie Druin. I'm getting good at this. Donnie, it's Victory Tuesday. We lost some people some money. Lost people a lot of money. And then we lost people more money. Bets were wrong. But in our defense, the NFL was an absolute madhouse on Sunday and Monday.
Yep.
So, I mean, not really our fault. Ray-Ray McCloud, nobody saw Ray-Ray fumbling. I honestly don't even know if it was a fumble. All that aside, how you feel?
When I tell you that was probably one of the weirdest weeks of football I've ever watched, ever.
Yeah.
Ever, dude. I mean, so many things just didn't go like everybody thought it was going to go. I'm like, I get it. Any given Sunday, it happens. Upset happens every week. Odd. Super odd. But odd. If you notice all of the wine stuff behind me, I thought it'd be fitting to do the podcast in front of a wine setting since everybody is whining about the officiating from last night's Steelers-Bears game. So
I think they have a point, though. What are your thoughts on the officiating thing? We weren't going to talk about this until the very end, if we were going to talk about it at all. Mike Tomlin says we're all for it. Was it worth it?
So we'll keep this really short. I don't hop on here. I don't BS people. You don't hop on here. You don't BS people. We're just not in that business. Okay. We're not some blog in Pittsburgh with the last name Depot. We don't do that. Right. The Steelers got some calls their way. Like you can't deny that, man. They got some calls their way. Not really used to that happening over the course of a season, but it has. And you know, for better or worse, Steelers had the officials call more flags for them than against them. The taunting thing. Everybody making a big ruckus at the NFL, the referee stepped back into Cassius Marsh. And then he threw the flag. I think people are forgetting that the official saw Marsh walk over towards the Steelers sideline for what felt like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Run his mouth.
See, did not say anything. That's the thing. No words were said. Just a stare.
When he played 10 snaps that game, whatever he did. He stared. Okay, whatever. Stared, didn't talk, whatever. With how taunting's been called this entire year, you can't do anything like that. So the official is literally grabbing his flag as Marsh is passing him to throw it. He's grabbing it, like his hands on it. And then he walks backwards into Marsh and then pulls out the flag. And everybody says, oh, Cassius Marsh, the referee like bumped into him and he threw the flag for bumping into him. No, he threw the flag for taunting. He didn't throw the flag for illegal contact towards an official. He threw the flag for taunting, which is exactly what he did. What it did. Dumb rule? Absolutely. I hate it. You're a football player. You made a football play. Do your thing. Talk your you know what. But you know what? If you're going to call it like you have been all year, that's taunting. Get over it.
It is very true. We are 10 weeks into the season, and I think that's the biggest point right now is when it happened, the leg kick, cool spinny thing, that was awesome. You know, I had no problems with that. Going over to the sideline, staring them down. In today's age, in today's year, that's a taunting penalty. We know that's a taunting penalty. Much less has gotten taunting penalties for what they have done this season. It stunk because it was in the moment. It also stunk because he was like, the ref ran into him. If it was the other way around, he would get crucified. He'd probably be ejected, blah, blah, blah. Yep. You're dead on. We're 10 weeks into the season. They understand what a taunting penalty is. There's nothing we can do about it. There's nothing they can do about it. The NFL made the decision. The rules committee made their decision. This is where we are. It's a taunting penalty. Move on. You live with it. Mike Tomlin said that he's all about it. He likes that, you know, they represent a large group of people and that they have a responsibility for the younger football players in this country. I definitely understand that. Do I agree with the rule? No, I'm with you. Super stupid. It makes absolutely no sense. This is an emotional game with emotions on the line each and every play. It is the fourth quarter. You just made literally the biggest play possibly of your season. almost just completed a whole comeback against the Pittsburgh Steelers, against the team that cut you when you shouldn't have been cut. It was all worth it. But that's today's NFL. It's unfortunate. We've been in situations like this before where guys need to adjust. We're 10 weeks in. Guys are adjusting quite well. Cassius Marsh made a dumb play. It happens. It is what it is. I agree with you. Bad news for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Chase Claypool will undergo an MRI on an injured toe. He limped off the field pretty significantly during the second half of the Steelers' Monday night showdown with the Bears. Went right back in like two plays later. They didn't even set the medical tent up. I was looking for him for a while until I realized that he was in the slot. Didn't really do much. I don't even think he had a catch once he went back in. He was not in there for the team's final drive. And then Tomlin came out afterwards and said that he has an injury today. He said that he has an MRI. Big news for the Steelers. I will address this too. Cam Hayward did not pop up on much for a significant injury.
He returned that last drive. Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah, that was a Cam Hayward veteran status play. That was we need to slow down this offense. I'm going to just limp off the field Cam Hayward. Yeah, that's all that was. When it comes to an ankle injury, he's had an ankle injury on the injury report for the last like 3 or 4 weeks. I asked him about it. He said, yeah, it's just been there. It's no big deal. Chase Claypool, obviously, could be significant. An MRI obviously means that something could be wrong. What's the impact of this if he's gone? Have we hit that breaking point where Chase Claypool goes down, it's Deontay Johnson and a bunch of nobodies?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm going to be paying close attention to my phone, see if the Steelers need to hit me up and call me to see if they need some extra receiver depth. But no, I mean, this is the time where depth is tested. You know, we're 10 weeks into the football season. Guys are going to get hurt. Teams are going to be banked up. It is what it is. This is why you draft well. This is why you try to curate a really good 53-man roster. In the case that these things do happen, you have the proper depth to add to it. I don't know if they have the proper depth to it, man. I mean, Ray McLeod did himself no favors last night, especially in terms of returning, even though Tomlin said, I believe he said that he's still going to roll with Ray as the team's punt returner moving forward.
Yeah, he is.
Cody White is a guy that, kind of been a popular topic on this podcast. Obviously, you like the frame he provides and certainly some of the upside that he brings. James Washington seems to be a little bit more involved, at least in wide receiver sweeps. So, maybe. So there's capable guys, right? But if it's going to be Deontay Johnson and friends, teams are only going to be able to really focus on Deontay Johnson. And you know what? Cody White beats us. James Washington beats us. Ray McLeod beats us. We can live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Key in on Deontay Johnson. Limit, take away their number one guy. And if they beat us some way else, so be it. So that's really my only fear, is that another guy just won't be able to step up whenever Deontay Johnson is getting a lot of attention. And the other guy will have a lot of one-on-one matchups. And there's not really a guy on the Steelers receiving core who I trust to win a one-on-one matchup right now outside of Deontay that's healthy. So I think a Chase Claypool absence will be not a lot larger than people think it might be, but there's definitely some adjustments that Matt Canada is going to need to make moving forward.
Yeah, obviously everybody thinks that Chase Claypool not being there would be a huge loss, and it would be a huge loss for the Steelers. It'd probably be just as significant as not having Juju. They do have Anthony Miller on the practice squad, which a lot of people have been intrigued by. I will say watching him, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyways. He has looked better, significantly better than he has than he did when he first came to Pittsburgh. Again, though, he's not a Chase Claypool. It's very hard to replicate a 6'4", 235-pound frame. That is definitely, definitely not Anthony Miller. The first time he came to practice, I was like, yeah, who's that little dude running, playing wide receiver? And they're like, that's Anthony Miller. I was like, that's not what I was expecting at all. He's probably as tall as me. I'm very short. I don't know if anybody knows that. James Washington did look good last night. I still do not trust James Washington. I'm kind of hitting a point right now where maybe James Washington isn't good. Maybe we don't know. It's like Zach Banner. Everybody thought Zach Banner was the answer. Zach Banner was the right tackle. Zach Banner should immediately step into a starting role when he came back. It's been 4 weeks. He has not been active. At this point, you have to start asking, maybe we were wrong. Maybe our assumptions were a little off. Maybe that's the same thing with Chase or with James Washington. I keep wanting to call him Chase Claypool, but with James Washington, it's been 4 years now. Nothing has clicked. Maybe that's just where we're at. Let me ask this. Can this offense operate the same as it has? Ben Roethlisberger has not thrown an interception throughout this losing streak. A lot of that changes. Deontay Johnson did not have a Deontay Johnson game last night because they worked pretty well to shut them down or shut him down. Chicago's defense did. Can this offense operate the same way, or does everything need to change and now they're just going to be run it with Najee, throw screen passes, find Deontay in the flat, a million jet sweeps?
Yeah, I think with Claypool out, we might see more involvement with like jet sweeps and more kind of like motion plays, at least to try to keep defenses honest, you know, with their eye discipline.
Yeah.
I think if Claypool's out, we might see more like two tight end sets with like Freiermuth and maybe like Gentry, or if Ebron never wants to see the field again and contribute, that would be cool. Things are going to have to change. And I don't know if that necessarily means running the ball a little bit more, but at least in terms of how the passing attack is curated and just different things that they're going to be able to do without guys like Juju, without guys like Claypool, it's just the Deontay Johnson show. This is why Deontay gets paid a bunch of money. This is why Matt Canada gets paid a bunch of money. We're going to have to see if these guys can really step up to the plate whenever, you know, their backs are against the wall and it truly is down to, hey, Deontay, go out there and make a play. I'm trying to draw up something. Let's hope it works on my end. Let's hope that you can do your job on your end.
So far this season, I do have a lot of faith in Deontay Johnson. That is a story that you need to monitor moving forward. Whenever we do get news of Chase Claypool's MRI, which I feel like is being a little overlooked right now. I know a lot of people aren't really talking about it. It is significant. There is something to be concerned about anytime a player gets an MRI, especially on a leg.
If somebody gets an MRI, like it's not like, oh, like he's going to be questionable this week. Like he's probably not going to play the next week.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's a significant injury. If you have to get checked out, significant injury, the toe could be the whole foot. You break a toe bone, your whole foot can be pretty messed up for a long, long time, especially for a player who jumps in the air every single play. Not great for Chase Claypool or that news. But like I said, that is a story that we have to keep an eye on moving forward. A story on Monday night that I think aggravated everybody. It definitely aggravated me. I've been kind of aggravated by everything that has surrounded this since this guy has entered the NFL. Monday Night Football, their broadcast team suggested that Najee Harris slept on the floor at Alabama when he first showed up there because that's what made him comfortable. We all know at this point that Najee grew up bouncing from homeless shelter to homeless shelter. He obviously did not have the best life as a child. There's a lot of things to digest here. The first one being, why would you do that if you're the Monday Night crew? And before we jump into anything, I do have the video, and I want to show Najee's response here on top of what Steve Levy had to say.
Even when he got to Alabama on the full ride, got the fancy dorm room, he spent the first few months in Alabama sleeping on the floor, said he was just more comfortable, he was more used to that.
Why?
I want to know where they got that, because whenever Steve Levy said that, he said, quote, he said, like Najee said it himself, right? I don't remember Najee ever saying that. I remember Najee saying that, you know, he slept in the homeless shelter a lot on the floor just because there was no room. But whenever you got to Alabama, you're telling me that dude voluntarily slept on the floor when they have probably nicer housing than I do as a grown adult? No, come on.
That's the thing is it kind of came off like a Disney story. It was like Najee lived such a tragic life that he only knew how to sleep on the floor. He didn't know how to sleep on a bed.
By the way.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. We've hit a point. Like, and it's kind of disrespectful at this point to talk about Najee in the way that everybody has, because Najee's story is inspirational. And it's something that I loved Brooke's story, Brooke Pryor's story on ESPN, about the whole thing, about talking to a trainer and getting mad at his one lifting buddy who opened up about Najee's story to other people. And then Najee having to realize, like, I could inspire other people. This is something that I need to talk about. It comes down to a lot of things. You cannot overplay any of it. And that's what ESPN's doing. I mean, I'm somebody who my environment growing up was not great. I'm very open about that. Yeah. But what I love about all of it, and I think that you feel the same, and I think a lot of people who overcame things that maybe they shouldn't have to have overcome growing up, really respect about themselves and about their story, is that that story is an inspirational one. It is one that you could look at and say, look, I did this when I probably shouldn't have. I should not have made it to where I am right now, or had the success or the love, or turned into the person that I am. And I had to really fight to get to where I am. I feel that way. I feel you feel that way. I feel Najee feels that way. And people on the outside, especially people who kind of just make it seem like they don't understand what that fight is like, are just looking at it and commercializing it. They're making it dramatized. They're just saying, hey, look, this is a story.
I think that's the biggest problem. Sorry to interrupt you. But even just like going back to like ESPN's NFL draft coverage, bro, every player that's drafted, it's always something about something tragic that happened with them. And look, I get it. Like, you want to tell this guy's story and kind of, you know, show, hey, like, this guy went through this, they made it to the pros. I get it, man. But like, when you're like beating that hammer over and over again, it's not showcasing what this guy went through. It's not showing the adversity he overcame. It's you trying to like make a couple pennies off of it. You know?
Exactly.
And that's what I hate so much. And dude, it's just like, imagine being Najee, man. Imagine like being a professional running back, and all people talk about is just like your bad upbringing. You know, you sleeping in like a homeless shelter. Look, I get it. Like, you want to tell people, and maybe there's a kid watching Monday Night Football in a homeless shelter, sees that and says, you know what, I can go out and do that, inspires him. I'm all for that. Please, 100%, I'm with it. But dude, just over and over and over again, we get it. We know Najee Harris' story. We get
exactly.
It.
We stop. And that's the thing, is it doesn't come off, and none of it ever came off like we're trying to build this inspirational story. Like
sincere, it's,
it's not sincere. It's very disconnected, and it's very Najee Harris slept on the floor in nursing or in homeless shelters, and then he slept on the floor at Alabama. Like, what is the significance of that at all whatsoever? It's one thing to say like, hey, if you don't know Najee's story, like, this dude had a pretty rough upbringing. You know, he had to really fight to get to have the opportunities that he has right now. That's one way to put it. But to just pick and choose the most dramatic things that you can find in the timeline and just represent those, I mean, come on. It's hit a point where if I'm Najee, I don't want to talk to the media. And that sucks for people like me, because I'm supposed to talk to Najee Harris, and I understand Najee, and I understand where he's coming from, and I understand that you don't want to talk about that all the time. It's one thing to show that, to share that story, to have that story, and to have it out there. And it's another thing to only surround yourself with that story. Like, Najee Harris is long removed from being the kid in the homeless shelter. And I get that he'll never not be that person, but that's who he was, and he had to fight extra hard to be where he is right now, which is an NFL running back. Share that story. Don't share that he slept on the floor at Alabama.
I kind of feel like James Conner went through the same thing.
Oh, after
he had beaten Hodgkin's lymphoma, which is a tremendous accomplishment. I don't think there's a person on this earth that's trying to discredit what James Conner overcame, because so many people can't, right? And like, for him to do that, get drafted, be a professional running back in the NFL, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. But dude, it felt like every time we talked about James Conner, every time he was brought up in a broadcast, anytime he's brought up in conversation, everybody kind of defaulted to him having cancer. Like,
yep.
It, like, at after a certain point, even James Conner's got to be like, bro, it's just like, I'm James Conner, the Pittsburgh Steelers running back. I'm like, yeah. I am many things. I am definitely a cancer survivor. But dude, I can't imagine just people being just so like hard on hammering home that point, you know?
Exactly. If people came up to me all the time, every single time, and was like, oh, Noah, you're the kid who had, you know, a rough upbringing. You're the kid who, you're the guy who had a rough home life. Your parents weren't always the greatest. I'd be like, okay, that's awesome, man. Like, I'm glad that you know that. Can we talk about how I work for Fan Nation, a part of Sports Illustrated, how I'm at the Pittsburgh Steelers facility every single day? Like, how I'm this, I've dreamt about this since I'm 5 years old and I've pulled it off. Can we talk about that stuff? Like, and that's how Najee is. It's, he's an NFL running back. He has done something that most people do not do. 3% of the people that even make it out of high school with an opportunity to get into the NFL, only make it into the NFL. He's part of that 3%. And you're going to focus on the fact that he had to sleep on the floor, and you're going to keep hammering that and not allowing his story to grow. It's bad. It is only the national media. I will say that. I have, you know, it, Brooke's story, I very much appreciated, and I liked when Najee was first drafted and we all talked about, you know, where he came from and what he wanted to do for Pittsburgh. I very much appreciated that. Right now, Monday Night Football, 10 weeks into the season, after he's having a rookie of the year season, you're going to talk about how he slept on the floor at Alabama like it's a joke? I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm pretty much had enough of the national media. I've definitely had enough of the Monday Night broadcast, and I think a lot of other people have. It stinks because the Manning cast sucks.
Dude, that's the only other option. I haven't got a chance to check it out yet, man.
It's bad. It's like, I watch it, and I'm going to watch it over the Monday Night broadcast every single Monday, but it's pretty bad. It's super awkward. Like, it's like, it's Peyton talking and then Eli like being super weird trying to fit like a sentence in there, and then their guest like being 4 seconds behind in a lag and trying to like chime in, and then it's awkward silence, and then they do it again and nobody ever finishes a sentence. It's pretty terrible.
I was gonna say, because if it was just like, if it was Peyton Manning talking about football, and it's just like meeting him like somewhere, like, well, like X's and O's, like football, like him describing like every little piece of knowledge he knows. And I'm just like feeding him beers at a bar and like eating like pretzels while he's doing this. I'm all for it. But like, Eli Manning seems like way too awkward to try to like be that third wheel between like me as a viewer, Peyton Manning, and like Eli.
Yeah, it is super, super awkward. Like, crazy awkward. It does include a lot of Peyton breaking down the game though, which is cool. And I think that that's, you like, that would be spot on. If it was just Peyton chilling on his couch with some crackers and a beer talking about the game, and like, he gets mad at points, like when teams are playing real bad or they do something real dumb, like he like legit gets angry, and I'm like, see, I love that. Like, give me that Peyton Manning. To have the guests on and everything, it's just, it's real awkward.
Yeah, and it sucks because, like, a bunch of broadcasting companies threw money at Peyton Manning whenever he first retired to, like, get him in a broadcast booth. And I think I'd much prefer him, like, in a professional setting, like, actually being able to flaunt his football knowledge and everything else that comes with it. Exactly like Tony Romo does. Tony Romo's been such a breath of fresh air just because he understands
when he's sober. Concepts.
Is he ever not sober during the broadcast?
I don't know. I've been watching a lot of podcasts that have been trashing Tony Romo for allegedly like sipping Coronas before games. Like, Jim Nantz doesn't really
approve of him.
Maybe it does. I don't know. I honestly don't really pay attention to Tony Romo's broadcasts. Most times I'm either working the game or, you know, I'm just not paying attention to what's being said on TV. But I do agree. I think Peyton in that setting would be way better than like a 3 second lag zoom time, zooming your brother on your couch.
Does it feel forced? Can I ask you that? Like, are they, do you think ESPN producers just like, hey, like, you have to be Peyton Manning, go be funny, go be this, go be that. Hey, we're going to bring these people on, even if you like them or not. Here, go make people laugh.
Yes, very much forced. Very much forced. Peyton is Peyton still, and like, he does get a lot of authentic Peyton out there. And Eli is definitely authentic, weird Eli. But yeah, it's super forced. It's nothing I'd be like Monday Night broadcasts kind of suck. Like, they're just, you're just kind of sitting there like, meh, maybe I should just put on Netflix in the background. Yeah. Let's just listen to music. I don't know. It's a weird time.
Commentary. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe we should start that. We should just start streaming on Monday night with the game. Oh, we'd definitely get man. We'd be sued for some lawsuit in about 25 minutes.
Can we make it unfiltered? How about we do a premium podcast?
Can we make it
where we do a premium podcast on Monday night where we do an unfiltered stream and people would just pay like a couple bucks and we just hang in and I just let it fly.
That would be awesome, actually. I don't know if we could. I don't know if we could get the like
probably not
streaming. Yeah, I feel like ESPN be like, hey, dude, that game's ours, actually. And we watched your last episode. You totally annihilated us.
Yeah, so, no, Mickey Mouse would be out the door super fast.
Super fast. I would just sit down and there'd be a knock. I'd be like, we didn't even start yet. I'd be like, yeah, I know what you're gonna do. I was ready for this.
We were listening on your iPhone.
Oh, yeah. The ESPN basically is the government, if we're being real. All right. The Pittsburgh Steelers somehow climb their way out of a 1-3 start with little hope. A devastating season. Ben Roethlisberger is washed. The offensive line is terrible. Najee Harris, bad pick. The defense is starting to crumble. Everything was going wrong. And here we go. Here we are. 5-3, sitting, I believe, third. Fourth, maybe, in the AFC, second in the AFC North behind just the Baltimore Ravens by a game and a half, which they play in, I believe, 3 or 4 weeks. The question remains, can the Pittsburgh Steelers win the AFC? Not even the AFC North. Can they win the AFC?
Can they? Yeah. I mean, I still feel like there's a lot of competition ahead of them. And, you know, the Steelers, they're not exactly staying healthy for a dominant run. At least down the stretch of the season. But hey, man, what is there? 8 weeks left? 7 games left for the Steelers? A lot can happen. And, you know, they've certainly proved us wrong before. They've proven me wrong before. What are they right now?
5-3.
Is that right?
Sixth. They play the Chargers in 2 weeks after the Lions. Then I believe they play the Bengals again. They still got to play the Baltimore Ravens twice. They have a game advantage on the Bills. There's a lot. It's not even necessarily like I agree with your they're not built for the long run theory. But there is a lot of bad teams in the AFC. The Tennessee Titans without Derrick Henry are winning the AFC right now.
I mean, you're not wrong. 7-2, they're number one team in the AFC. There's really no like strong team, right? Like teams like the Bills aren't as good as we thought they were. Patrick Mahomes has not looked like himself at all this season. And to put on top of that, the Chiefs defense is abysmal, like god awful on the field. So that definitely doesn't help Patty Mahomes down there in Kansas City. Just not a lot of like great teams. So yeah, I mean, it is all about if the Steelers can get hot at the right time, almost the exact opposite of what we saw last year. Steelers started 11-0, fell apart towards the end of the year. And then now, you know, they stumbled out of the gates a little bit, especially after their loss, their win against Buffalo. And now starting to like pick things up, right? And like a few weeks ago, we looked at this stretch of games they're currently in right now and said, hey man, they can run the table on this. If they can go 3-0 versus these teams, got like the chance of making the playoffs, right? And you know, once Big Ben gets in the playoffs,
that's a whole other story. Big Ben in the playoffs is Big Ben in the playoffs. Mike Tomlin in the playoffs is Mike Tomlin in the playoffs. Pittsburgh Steelers defense is the Pittsburgh Steelers defense in the playoffs. Say whatever you want. Even the Browns. Marquise Pouncey doesn't throw the snap over his head, and Ben Roethlisberger doesn't throw a pick in like the first 7 seconds of the game. Steelers win that game. This is the interesting point to this. The Steelers play the Lions, which you can assume is a win. It's the Lions, and this is the Pittsburgh Steelers, and this is a game that they usually would lose. But Tunch is going to get inducted into the Hall of Honor. It's back-to-back home games. They just had a tight one against the Bears. I just don't see it.
It's Jared Goff playing.
Yeah, like it's the Lions. It's not like if it was the Bears and it was the other way around, I'd be like, man, maybe there's something to worry about. I don't have any worries here. It goes the Lions, the Chargers, the Bengals, the Ravens, then you play the Vikings, and then you come back and you play the Titans, the Chiefs, and the Browns. And then the Ravens to end it off with. So they're basically gearing up for a final stretch against everybody that they have to beat to make it to the top of the AFC. So that opportunity is most definitely there.
Yeah, we're going to learn a lot about these guys down the stretch of the season. I feel like we've already learned a lot about them at the beginning. And a lot of people, including me, thought this team was basically done and over with after they started, what was it, 1-3, right?
Yeah.
And after they started 1-3, I mean, a lot of people were wanting to throw the towel in. And, you know, they've put together a nice little win streak, and they've got a very favorable matchup at home next week versus the Lions. And after that, anything can happen, man. I truly mean that. And, you know, football is a very weird sport. A lot of people lost money last week because it's a very weird sport and anything can happen. So,
yeah, we lost money last week because it's a very weird sport and anything can happen. Before we go here, I do want to run through these games here because I want to see, you know, how well the Steelers can do. I'm going to pick them. Or I'm going to name them. You let me know if they win. We'll see where we predict the Steelers end up here. The Detroit Lions, we're both going to say, obviously, a win there. The L.A. Chargers. At the L.A. Chargers.
Dude, I don't know, man. The Chargers on their best day are a really good team. So are the Steelers,
Yeah. On the worst day are a very bad team. Win or loss.
Same with the Steelers, man. It's
yeah, very true.
It's hard. I think I would slightly side with the Chargers here. I mean, Herbert is such a really good quarterback for how young he is. And I feel like if Justin Fields was just a little bit better last night, throughout the course of four quarters, the Bears might have won that game. So I'll give the edge to Herbert there.
All righty. Week 12 at Cincinnati Bengals.
Dude, you would ask me this question 3 weeks ago. I would have told you the Bengals didn't blow out because like they were playing some really good football. But now 2 weeks in a row, I mean, just getting upset by the Jets and just getting
demolished
by the Browns. I don't think you lose two to the Bengals in 1 year. I really don't think so. So I'll take the Steelers in that one.
All righty, then coming back home to face the Baltimore Ravens, first time against Lamar Jackson this season.
Take the Steelers. I don't think the Ravens are a good enough team to go into Heinz Field and beat the Steelers, especially if the Steelers are firing on all cylinders. And I always pick the Steelers and the Ravens to go 1-1 against each other every year because it's such a toss-up, especially whenever those two teams play. I usually end up taking the home team anyway. So if it's at Heinz Field, yeah, give me the Steelers.
Yeah, I kind of like that one. And it's a 4:30 game. It's a 4:25 game. It gives the fans a little bit extra time to get those beers in your system. You know what I'm saying? I like that one. Thursday, week 14, Thursday night at Minnesota. I have no faith in the Vikings. Let me tell you, the Vikings lost me a lot of money this weekend. I have zero faith in the Minnesota Vikings.
Dude, the Vikings are the team where like they're really good.
Yeah, but they suck.
They're really good for 8 games a year, and they're really bad for 8 games a year, and they'll just be like around 500 forever. Like they're not bad enough to tank and get a good draft pick, but they're not good enough to like go make a serious playoff run. So they're kind of just like meddling in football purgatory. I'll take the Steelers. It wouldn't surprise me if the Vikings win, just because you'd never know what team's going to show up in Minnesota on a week to week basis. But I mean, just looking at the two teams right now and how they're playing, yeah, give me the Steelers.
Back home, week 15, Sunday, 1 o'clock, against the AFC leading Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry still will not be back, I believe.
I was about to say,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He could just be back, but I would highly doubt that. And even if he is, you're not getting 100% Derrick Henry.
Yeah, that would be like a 50 or 60% Derrick Henry. I thought he was out for almost the entire year.
I heard the year at first, then I heard 8 weeks, then I heard it cut down to 6 weeks, possibly.
Jeez, man. If that's just at the six-week line. Derrick Henry's a freak of nature, man. If they don't have Derrick Henry, I really like the Steelers in that game. I mean, that receiving core hasn't exactly been what it's been propped up to be. I mean, I watched the Arizona Cardinals go in, just mollywopped them the first week of the season. So, yeah, I like the Steelers in that game.
All righty, the Kansas City Chiefs in Arrowhead, which is the toughest place to play in the NFL. In week 16, Sunday, 4:30 game. I don't like the Chiefs this year, but Arrowhead always scares me.
Yeah, I against any team, it doesn't matter how they're playing. Like playing at Arrowhead with Patrick Mahomes still a quarterback, I mean, I got to take them. Especially with how the Steelers secondary as a whole have been playing, I'll take Mahomes.
At that point, Mahomes could be divorced and have already gotten rid of his brother. So you never know. Things could change.
he would week 17, vastly improve.
Things could vastly improve. Hopefully he keeps the kid. I'm pretty sure his wife had a baby. So hopefully he keeps the kid. Week 17, Monday night, the dog pound comes to the Steel City. Cleveland Browns, week 17.
Enough said. W. Running back.
They 2-0 on the Browns.
They think they can walk in the Heinz Field, get a win on Monday Night Football. 21 straight Monday Night Football victories. You think you're going to Pittsburgh and win that game? You think dislocated shoulder Baker Mayfield is going to pull out a game? No.
Yeah, don't think so. And then week 18 at the Baltimore Ravens. You said that they split a game. I kind of agree on that one. I think that one's up for grabs. But we will say this, and I think I could speak for both of us here, that if that game is a decider for the AFC North and for maybe the AFC as a whole, there is no guaranteed nothing. That game could be a blowout for the Ravens. That game could be a blowout for the Steelers. That game could be down to the wire the entire time. It could be a Ben versus Lamar showdown that nobody saw coming, and it could also be a defensive battle for the ages. That one
we did see Ben has wheels last night on that quarterback keeper to set up the game.
Yeah, not enough wheels to get 1 yard, but he had wheels. Enough wheels to get 0.5.
Why is that the play of a yard for that scenario? How do you have that man who needs a walker?
It wasn't him. So he explained that after the game. It was an RPO, and he looked at it and said, Najee's not going to get this yard. I got to take it to the outside, and I got to get the yard.
Dude.
That's a Hall of Famer right there. 39 years old, put it on his back and said,
put Dwayne Haskins in at that point, dude.
What are you doing? Run the reverse option there was a couple of times where Khalil Herbert took the snap and like faked a handoff to Justin Fields, ran the option that way. Do that or something. Like, get Ben going downhill before you got to cut it back, go away from the blocks to try to get a yard. Couldn't even do it. All right, so the Pittsburgh Steelers, by our guess here, our prediction, end with 5 more wins, 3 more losses. What does that leave them at? They're 5-3 right now. That is a 10-7 season. 10-6 season. Did we miss a game?
Did we?
10-6. 10-6 season.
No, it'd be 10-7 because they added an extra regular season game.
Oh, the Lions. So they would be 11-6. No, we forgot about the Lions.
Don't they play the Seahawks? No, they already played the Seahawks.
No. We didn't include the Lions game because we chalked that one up as just an automatic win. So 11-6, easily a playoff team. Possibly 11-6 could win you the AFC.
Steelers win total of over 9.5 hits. I'd love that.
Toss it in there, SI Sportsbook, if you haven't already. Also, TJ Watt, I'm pretty sure still has pretty good odds to win Defensive Player of the Year. If you have not racked that up, please go put all of your money. Not all of your money. We like to stay within the means of betting. Bet within your means.
Be a smart gambler. Yes. Only bet 2 units on it. A unit should be somewhere between 1-3 to 5% of your bankroll in your bank account. Don't get crazy. Don't bet ludicrous amounts of money on something you know for sure isn't going to win, because that's how people lose their money. And then also, more betting advice, if you're down, most of the time – you're going to try to make money up on Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. Don't do it. That is exactly when sports books make back a lot more money, is from people chasing their bets, trying to break even on the weekend, and they end up digging themselves further in the hole.
Yep, that's how it works. Your bank account, your SI Sportsbook account hits zero. You leave it at zero for the week. You move on to next week where you try to start over. I always had the best advice, or somebody gave me the best advice one time that said, never bet to move up a tax bracket. Never bet to the point where you can move down a tax bracket. That's where I like to stay. Keep it in that happy medium. But again, TJ Watt, Defensive Player of the Year, could be a lock at this point. Thank you, everybody, for jumping on to Tuesday's episode of All Steelers Talk. Make sure to subscribe to us on YouTube at All Steelers Talk and follow me and Donnie on Twitter at Nostrack, at Donnie Droon. Enjoy your beautiful Tuesday, hopefully here in the Berg, because it is lovely, and we will see you on Thursday.